My name is Lisa Falsko. I'm President and CEO of the Alaska World Affairs Council, and I am so thrilled to be partnering once again with the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. You may have remembered we started off the summer in May, where we featured Ambassador Kåre Aas from Norway, who talked about falling oil prices, what is Norway doing, recommendations for Alaska and other Arctic countries. And we are back again today with a super exciting program that we have been anticipating and really looking forward today and as part of our Ambassador Series. So you are all in for a treat today. Today's program is going to be about Qatar, more than just oil and natural and gas. And I believe this is the first official visit we have had from a governmental official from Qatar. So we are really excited to see him here today. And I'd like to thank two special individuals who made this possible. There are two men, young men from Alaska, Hamid and Ahmed Nasser, who are DIMED graduates, who have gone on to do great things. They went to West Point and Oxford and are doing great things in the world and for our country. And I'd like to recognize them for all that you did to make it possible. Thank you, Hamid and Ahmed. It just reminds me, you know, that we have so much to be proud of with our youth here in Alaska, the great things that they are doing, and the wonderful future we have in front of us because of youth like this, and how important it is for our education. So a little plug for education for our youth. We have a bright future ahead of us. At today's program, you will notice the ambassador is going to discuss Qatar's increasing role in the world, oil and natural gas development as a vehicle for change, his country's efforts in defeating extremism, and the 2022 FIFA World Cup, among other things, with moderator General Ralston. There are some cards on your table, so if you have any questions, please feel free to fill them up at any time and just raise your card in the air. There will be people who are collecting those cards and bringing them to me, and we will present those to the ambassador at the end of the program. So please feel free to write down a question, and we'll get to those at the end. And with that, I'd like to introduce our feature guest. To my immediate right is Ambassador His Excellency Mohammed Al-Khouari, who was born in Qatar. He received his bachelor's degree in political science from the University of Portland in 1980, where he stopped on his way up here to visit his friends and former alums. In 1990, he received a master's degree in international relations from the University of Madrid. He is married with five children and speaks English, Spanish, French, and Arabic. In December 2013, he's not going to give his presentation in any of those other languages, don't worry. In December 2013, Al-Khouari was appointed to serve as the ambassador of the state of Qatar in Washington, D.C. Prior to his arrival in the United States, he served for a decade as Qatar's ambassador to France, which means you might know a thing or two about Bordeaux wines, I understand, and was accredited to Switzerland and the Holy See. In 2007, he also became the non-resident ambassador to Monaco and Portugal. Ambassador Al-Khouari joined the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in 1981 as Third Secretary. Following a post in Tehran from 1991 to 1992, Khouari became the Director of European and African Affairs from 1995 to 1997, and again from 2001 to 2002, as well as a member of the Diplomatic Consular Services from 1997 to 2001. Ambassador Al-Khouari is a very genuine, a humble, and a hardworking man, and has received numerous awards and accolades for his service as a diplomat, including Grand Cross of the Order of Merit from Portugal in 2012. In 2007, the President of France presented him with an officer badge of the Legion of Honor, the highest decoration in France, and the World Affairs Council of D.C. gave him a certificate of appreciation this past year. To his right, we have the most popular General Ralston, who served as the nation's second highest ranking military position as vice chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff. He also served as commander of U.S. European Command and commander of NATO. General Ralston is also known to many Alaskans as a former commander of the Alaskan Command and the Alaskan NORAD region. As commander of the U.S. European Command from 2000 to 2003, General Ralston was the senior U.S. military officer and commander of all U.S. forces in the area of responsibility that covers more than 21 million square miles and includes 93 nations. This territory extends from the magnificent North Cape of Norway, through the waters of the Baltic and the Mediterranean seas, most of Europe, parts of the Middle East, to the Cape of Good Hope in South Africa. He led the command in daily missions in the war against terrorism, from the streets of Bosnia to the waters of the Mediterranean, and he oversaw air operations in the no-fly zone over North Iraq. He's also a former board member of the World Affairs Council. We are so honored and thrilled to have General Ralston back as our moderator today, and I'd like to turn over the microphone to you, General.
Lisa, thank you very much, and let me first of all welcome all of you from the Chamber of Commerce and the Alaska World Affairs Council. As I was telling the ambassador earlier, one of the things I'm particularly proud of Anchorage is the fact that we have you citizens that are interested in what's going on in the world. As my biggest criticism of my fellow Americans is they get so concentrated on their little county that they don't understand what's going on outside that county and how it impacts them. Let me ask a question for a show of hands. How many of you have ever been to Qatar? Okay, we got at least three I've seen there, which that's good. I thought I might tell you a little bit about my experiences there before we have a dialogue with the ambassador. One of the things that you may or may not know, the finest airbase that I have ever been on anywhere in the world was built by the government of Qatar about 20 years ago for the United States Air Force. I remember being there in the mid-90s, and there was a little man-made hill, and I climbed up on top of it. And as far as you could see in every direction were earth movers building this airbase. It is, without question, the finest I've ever been on. Squadrons are located underground so that they are defended against chemical and biological attack. A huge part of this airbase had been set aside for the United States, for our munitions, our airplanes, and our equipment. And by the way, this was done without a cost of one penny to the United States of America. So for almost 20 years now, all of our airplanes in the Middle East have been operated out of this airbase, Al Udeid, in Qatar. We have our central command, which, as you know, is responsible for operations in the Middle East. Where do you think their headquarters is? It's located outside of Doha in Qatar. Once again, huge support that we could not operate and carry out our national defense missions without the support of our very good friends in Qatar. So that's a couple of facts I wanted to throw out there. It's probably not normally understood by the American public. Geographically, they are located between, they're a small country with a small population. To the north is Iran, and to the south is Saudi Arabia. And you can see some of the difficulties that that puts a small country in. So, Mr. Ambassador, I might start by asking, your country plays an outsized diplomatic role in a very dramatic region, being the Middle East. You have to have a balance. For example, natural gas is extremely important to your country, more so than oil. They are probably the largest natural gas supplier anywhere in the world. But their gas field is partially claimed by Iran and partially by Qatar. So you have a delicate balance to keep your economic interests going without offending your GCC countries. Could you discuss a little bit for us about that diplomatic balance?
Thank you, General. I am so glad and honored to be today with you and this beautiful state of Alaska. And I see a lot of similarity between Alaska and Qatar, you know. The natural gas, the small population, and a lot of aspiration for the people here. And I would like to thank also the World Affairs Council and Chamber of Commerce for their invitation, and I thank particularly Lisa for her introduction, and it's something unique for me when I told Doha I'm going to Alaska, they said, well, what are you going to do there? I said, well, it's I received an invitation, and I am ambassador in the United States. So Alaska is one of these states, so I have to come. So go back to your question, General. We are a small country, but with a vision, and we are endowed with a resource of natural gas. So we are trying to help our region to see how we can develop this region, which is going through a lot of difficulties and a lot of turmoil. We are trying to invest almost in every Arab countries. The natural gas for us, this is the main sources of revenue and wealth, which has created the wealth in Qatar. We are sharing the field with Iran, but there is no any problem or difficulties for sharing this thing. They have their own part, and we have our own part. And we have an excellent relation with Iran, because like what you mentioned, we are a small country between Saudi Arabia and Iran. So we are trying to play a role to stabilize our region, because a small country usually without any political agenda, they can contribute a lot for the stability in the region, because we are accepted by all the countries, all the political and concerned parties in the region. They see Qatar as a small country, so they are welcome to come and try to resolve the disputes and the problems in the region. We have achieved a lot of success in our mediation. We help freed a lot of hostages, Western Americans and Middle Eastern. So this is something that no country in the region can play this role except a small country like Qatar. And we also resolve a lot of dispute in Lebanon, in Sudan, in Libya, in Yemen, in Eritrea, in Djibouti, and other part of the world. We succeeded in some of them. We did not succeed in some of them also because of our region going through a lot of problems. It's not everything is guaranteed to solve the problem in the Middle East. So a small country with a vision as a catalyst for resolving the problems in our region. And we are going to continue with this thing because we need to stabilize our region. Our region is very important for the whole world because it is a point that link the East and the West, and a region that's important economically for the whole world. So I think stability in our region is serving everybody.
Thank you very much. Let me move to a topic of education. And I think the ambassador embodies something that I feel very strongly about. One of the great things our country has going for it is our university system. And the fact that countries from around the world will send their young men and women to go to school in the United States. And from a very selfish American point of view, if you can take an 18-year-old for 4 years of their life at a very formative period and put them on an American college campus, you've got them for the rest of their lives. And the fact that the ambassador went to the University of Portland, Oregon, by the way, in the Northwest, I think he would admit, a great impact on him, and the fact that he is a good friend of the United States of America. In his country, I know that the Emir has spent a lot of time, effort, money on revising their education system. I know they had the RAND Corporation there for many years, completely redoing their K through 12 education system. And I thought maybe you might give us an update on where you are with universities in Qatar.
Yeah, you know, education for us and for the whole region is very important, because once you root education, you uproot the radicalism and extremism in the region. So once you educate the young people and create jobs for them, you give them hope. And this is something very important for us. So education is one of the pillars of Qatar's vision for 2030. And we are investing a lot in education. We created an educational city. And we are happy and pleased to honor and to host 6 American universities in Qatar. We have Georgetown, we have Texas and A&M, we have Cornell, we have Northwestern, Virginia Commonwealth, and Carnegie Mellon. So as you see these big names, education par excellence, we have them in the region and serving the whole young people in the GCC country and Arab countries and in Asia and India and Iran. So we have all the students coming from all parts of the world to benefit from this high quality education. And especially the girls are benefiting more than the boys, because the boys, they can go abroad, like what you mentioned, to come to the United States. But most of the girls, they are enjoying now that Qatar is hosting these big 6 American universities. Beside this, we have another also big university from Europe, from London, from Canada, from France. So in the total, we have 11 international universities in Qatar, beside the University of Qatar, the national one. So I agree with you, General, also once you educate people, you keep them as friends forever. And this is something really how I feel, and my friends, my colleagues, they are now becoming ministers, becoming businessmen, or businesswomen. Whenever they get their educated in any country, they have like compassion and passion toward this culture, this people, and they are their ambassadors. So you have a lot of people who are educated from United States now. They are serving very high important posts in Qatar and other region, also in the other countries in the region. We have around 2,000 Qatari students now studying in the United States. I hope that we'll have some coming to Alaska. It is very, very important universities here. So education for us is one pillar for developing, for fighting against radicalism, extremism in our region, and creating strong new generations by giving them this kind of a high quality of education, creating jobs, changing all the landscape of the Middle East through education. And we created also a lot of institutions for the education. For example, we have this fund, it's called Saltec Fund, giving scholarship to all students from Middle East who obtain very good notes in their high school exam. They can apply for our fund to get scholarship and to go to study any part of the world, in Europe, in the United States, in the Middle East. And after they graduate, we guarantee jobs for them in Qatar. So we give them scholarship, we guarantee job for them after they finish, if they like, to come to Qatar to work in Qatar. So education, I think through education, we can change a lot of things in the Middle East.
Thank you very much. You had mentioned similarities between Alaska and Qatar. Small population, rich in natural resources. And then you have to say, okay, well, what do you do with those natural resources as a small population? I remember being in your country a few years back, and I had a meeting with your finance minister, who told me he had just come out of a meeting where he had signed a contract for $135 billion worth of LNG tankers. Now think about that for a moment, $135 billion. But that was foresight on the part of the country. They had tremendous amount of natural gas, but they needed to get it to market. So how do they do it? They built the ships, and they now have a fleet of LNG tankers that are on a constant run between Qatar and Asia. You have invested in what I will call a sovereign wealth fund, and the Qatari Investment Authority, which would be the equivalent of our permanent fund, made an announcement not long ago that they are going to invest $35 billion in the United States of America between now and 2020. I thought you might want to make a comment about investment in the United States.
Thank you. Let's first start with investing in natural gas. This is something that needs a lot of investment, you know, and I think the decision we took to change from as a country of oil producer, which is not really that much, Qatar is not really a major oil producer, to a natural gas producer, and we became the first country now supplying natural gas to the whole part of the world. And we produce annually around 80 million tons of natural gas. So of course, you know, once you have all this production and you have all this vision, you have to invest in that tankers, because this is something linked to what we are doing to produce this natural gas. So I think it's linked to each other, producing and building ships and tankers, and this is something for us is becoming a major decision for Qatar to take. So we'll go to our investment, because we cannot make our country depend only on natural gas, because we have to diversify our economy. And we took a decision also to create our sovereign fund, which is now considered one of the, it's not the biggest. We have other countries who have the biggest sovereign fund, like Norway, like Emirates, Saudis, and other countries. But our fund, sovereign fund, it's important in the region. We are investing in diversifying our investment in different countries, in different continents. We have investment in Asia and Europe and Africa. And finally, we took a decision to invest here in the United States. And last year, we announced $35 billion investment in the United States. And we already, almost 1 year, we are committed to $10 billion. We signed contracts for $10 billion investment for the last year. So our investment in diversify here in the United States in energy and infrastructure and technology and real estate, tourism. We are not investor only in one area. We want to see that our investment almost in all domain of economy. Investment for Qatar, it is important. Because we, as you know, the price of oil and gas always ups and downs, so we cannot depend on this revenue. But our strategy, we want to see the revenue from our investment doubled more than the revenue coming from natural gas. So, and this is what our strategy, and this is what we are plan, and we hope by 2025, will the revenue of our investment will be more than the revenue coming from natural gas.
I congratulate you on the foresight that your country has had to do that. Another topic is concerns airlines. The U.S. is part of a agreement called the Open Skies. And there are at least three Middle East airlines, Qatar Airways, Emirates, Etihad, perhaps others, that have direct routes from the Middle East to the United States. Some of these are partners, for example, with Alaska Airlines. There has been some controversy raised by some U.S. airlines, and I wonder if you could give us an update on where you see that particular issue.
Let me see. First, the Open Sky Agreement, I think it's serving everybody. It's not only our airline or Emirates or Etihad. I think it's beneficial for all American airlines. And we have now a negotiation and discussion between our civil aviation delegation or teams with the American counterpart. So hopefully this meeting will solve any misunderstanding. But it's important to see the development of our airlines. I don't know how many of you here took Qatar Airways. If you haven't taken it, I advise you just to try once to see the how good this airline and the services. So we have 10 destinations from Doha to 10 cities here in the United States. We have two daily flights to Washington, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Miami, Houston, Dallas, Los Angeles, the most closest city for you, and Las Vegas. So these 10 destinations, I think it's serving a lot of or enhancing a lot of economic cooperation between Qatar and the United States, and borrowing a lot of money for these cities because bringing a lot of tourists, bringing a lot of businessmen, students, covering a lot of region that American airlines, they don't go. So I think the airlines from the region, Qatar Airways or Emirates or Etihad, they are doing a lot of business for the United States, and there is no such violation with the Open Sky Agreement. We are respecting this agreement, and the American airlines, they are not losing money, and they are not losing jobs, and actually we are creating jobs for a lot of Americans here in the United States. We are buying the airplanes. So imagine all these airplanes, how many jobs they are creating for Americans. So I think if there is misunderstanding between both sides, it can be sorted out and solved by through negotiation, and this is what we are doing now.
Thank you. Let me ask one more question before we get to your question, so Lisa, if you are coming up with that. And let me talk about military cooperation between your country and the United States. As we mentioned before, you live in a very dangerous neighborhood. You've got Yemen to your east, you've got Syria to your west, and all other kinds of opportunities there. Your country has bought the C-17 strategic airlifter from Boeing. You have expressed a desire to buy F-15 fighter planes. That's still being looked at by the administration. And missile defense is a big issue for all the countries in the GCC. And I know you have expressed a desire for the THAAD missile defense system. All of us that work in the bureaucracy of the United States in terms of weapons release know that things do not move rapidly. It takes far too long to get things done. But I wondered if you'd like to comment on where you see that process going.
Well, I want to emphasize that our military cooperation is an example, really, for the whole countries in the region. We have very strong relationship with the United States. As you mentioned, the military base in Qatar, which is serving American strategic in the region and beyond that also, you know, serving in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria and the whole Middle East. So this kind of cooperation is becoming an example for our bilateral relation in the Middle East. Yes, we are waiting for the F-15, and hopefully that we will get the final approval from the administration and the Congress, because in the end, all these airlines, it will benefit also the American interest, because we are allies and friends, and we are fighting side by side with the United States against extremism and radicalism in the region. So this airplane is going to, I think, help our common interest.
While Lisa's coming up for this, let me give you an opportunity to put in a plug for something. Many of us have been watching the Olympics for the past few days. Coming up here before too long, your country will be hosting the World Cup, I think 2020, correct? 2022, I'm sorry, off 2 years. How's that coming?
Well, we are preparing our country for hosting this big event, and I think it's serving really the interests of the whole region, because the first time in the Middle East a country is hosting this big, huge event, which needs a lot of investment. We are investing a lot in Qatar now. It will be around $200 billion to prepare for the World Cup. But of course, this thing is not only for the World Cup, but it accelerates our economic development, because we need a lot of infrastructure. And hosting this World Cup, it's helping us to accelerate all the infrastructure we need for our country. And it's giving hope for the young people in the region, because the people in the Middle East, they say, you know, okay, we are now qualified and we have a country in our region who can host this event. And I think the having this World Cup in Qatar, it will be like a cultural bridge between East and West, and we'll get all young people together in Qatar in 2022, and we are very proud of hosting this event.
Thank you. Okay, Lisa, over to you for questions from the audience.
This is actually going to be exciting. So thank you so much, Ambassador His Excellency Al-Khawari, for giving us a little bit of information and about politics and business and soccer and education. And the questions coming from the audience are reflecting all of these issues. So we'll just kind of go through them, and people want to hear more. So this is really great. The first question is, what do you see as the key risks to Qatar's economy, and what are your government's priorities to mitigate and lessen these risks?
Well, the risk for our economy is just the instability in the region. This is the main major things, because once we have a stable region, we will develop the whole region together. Because I think wars and turmoils and conflicts, it is really an obstacle for our economy. And that's why our diplomacy is very active to have a conflict resolution and to see how we can help to reduce the tension we have in our region. And once we see there are stability, you will see the economic development in the whole region. And this is very important for us.
Okay, next question. How big of a problem is the Muslim Brotherhood, and how do you minimize their impact?
We want to say, explain before, you know, to answer this question directly. Our policy in the region is to create a platform in Doha. Any political forces or movement who believe in democratic process and political process and human rights, respecting women, not resorting to violence, they are welcome to come have a dialogue with us. And this is something very important for Qatar. But we cannot see if any political movement or any Muslim brother, if they are not resorting to violence, why we create enemy with them? Because we want to see there is a wall in between moderate forces and radical forces. We cannot put everybody together. And this is very dangerous in our region, because once we say we are working for stability, you should know how you create this stability in the region. So we do not see the Muslim Brothers are forces or a force resorting to violence. They been elected democratically in Egypt. And so far, we do not see any sign that they are not only Qatar, even your government, your administration, American administration, they don't see that Muslim Brother is resorting to any, they are not putting them as a terrorist group. So I think, look at in Europe, for example, they have a democratic, Christian Democrat as a political party. So why don't we have in our region a Muslim Democrat? And they are, if they are not resorting to violence, they are respecting the democratic process, let's them get their chance through the democratic process. So this is a question that my answer for your question with about Muslim Brothers, as long as they are not resorting to violence, we have to encourage them to be a moderate force in our region.
Okay. What is your reaction to the claim that Qatar is violating international human rights towards Shiite citizens?
I never heard this Qatar is violating human rights to the Shiites. First of all, we have the Shiites in Qatar, they are 4-5%. They are the most wealthiest people in Qatar. And I don't heard any NGOs raising this issue before, because Qatar, we have stability in our society. People, all the groups, no matter if they are religious or ethnics or races, they are living in harmony and living in peace and respect. And the Shiites is considered part of our social fabric in Qatar. And honestly, I never heard there is a violation of Qatari law against Shiites community.
Okay, and here's another question. By funding Syrian rebel groups, what is your reaction to the claim that Qatar is indirectly funding Daesh in the Syrian conflict?
Well, you can ask the American government if we are supporting Daesh. This is, we are fighting against Daesh. Within the international coalition, we are very active. We mentioned this military base, it's been used against Daesh. So how come we give all these facilities and at the same time we are supporting Daesh? This is big contradiction and cannot be, and the Americans, they have their own ways by CIA, by their satellites. They will discover what Qatar is doing if we are supporting Daesh. Daesh is creating danger for everybody in the region, and we are fighting against them with the international coalition. And at the same time, we see to fight Daesh in the end, you have to seek the roots and causes of this problem, not only taking immediate military and security measure, which is very important, but we have to look beyond that. And this is something important in our region for the stability of the region. We have to understand why this group were created. Who created them? You know, this regime in Syria, they are responsible of creation of Daesh. These, most of the people who are now leader in Daesh, they were prisoner with the Iraqi government and Syrian government. So now they are, who are responsible about all these things? Syrian regime, they killed over 400,000 people. They were demonstrating pacifically just for their rights. And then this regime came and killed them. So what do you expect after this thing? And this is how we, these people, this regime created Daesh. They are responsible about the creation of Daesh. So Qatar is helping Syrian people, yes. In the beginning, we stood very firm, and we are going to continue to stand by the Syrian people, because we cannot leave people be killed for just asking for their rights. You know, because we had a good relation with the regime in the beginning. We talked to them, we told them, you know, solve your problem peacefully. This is your own people. Do not kill people in the street. So they refused to listen. And in the end, we had to choose with the regime killing his people or being with the people who are killed. So we chose to be with the people, with the Syrian people. So this is our position toward the Syrian crisis.
And just to clarify, Daesh is another term for ISIS or ISIL or IS. As ambassador, what achievement are you most proud of since you became ambassador to the United States?
Well, I am proud of to see that our bilateral relations getting stronger and stronger between Qatar and the United States. I am proud that to see that a lot of Qatarese students coming now to study in the United States. This is something for us, like I explained how important education for us. And being ambassador also, you know, it's, you get to know all of the culture, which I really admire. American culture for me is, I learned so many things, and I have a lot of friends. So this kind of achievement in my career makes me very happy to see that I am ambassador in the United States.
We're happy as well.
Thanks.
Now, like you mentioned, oil and gas is a big issue for Alaska as well, and this is addressing that question. How do you achieve balance between Qatar's role as regulator of gas development activities and the role of owner state of gas resources?
Well, I think, you know, we are, I think the small country has to control all the natural resources, because it's important to be sure that everybody in the country benefiting from this resources, and this is what we are doing for our people, for education, healthcare, prosperity, jobs. So I think to be sure that everybody in the country is benefiting from this resources, it's very important. And at the same time, Qatar using its wealth to help others. In our region, development, investment, and humanitarian aid. And I think I brought some books with me here to show you how is Qatar doing in the world for humanitarian. We are allocating every year $1 billion helping people in all parts of the world, regardless of their religion, races, ethnics. Just whenever we feel that people are in need, we help. And this book tells you our story and especially here during Katrina storm. And Qatar contributed $100 million in 18 big projects in education, health, and housing. So I think the natural resources, it is a must that the government has to control to be sure that it's everybody is benefiting from it.
$100 million for Hurricane Katrina. That's impressive. Okay, this is to address the issue of education. You mentioned a very generous offer for students that if they come to the United States, you fund their education as well as provide guaranteed jobs when they come back. This question is, how do you provide the jobs for the graduates when they come back? And this person has read that the lack of jobs is a problem in Saudi Arabia and maybe some of your neighbors. And can you keep students who return by example or other ways? How do you provide the jobs for the graduates and how do you keep them?
Well, I talked about this fund. It's called Celtic Fund. That's mean your connection. And because all the students who get the scholarship are the most intelligent student with a good grade. So they are studying to be doctors, engineers, managers, administration, business. So we need, in our development now, Qatar needs all these brains and talents. So we can fit everybody coming to work in Qatar in these domains and principles. So it's not easy to guarantee job, that's I agree with you now, because the number of the graduates who are coming from abroad, they are huge. But our economy, because we are a small country and we are developing a lot of projects, we need more doctors, we need more engineers, we need more graduate in management, finance, IT. So it's still our economy is open. We get also some people coming from the region. I agree with some countries in the region, they have some employment. And we are opening our door for our neighbors. We have some people coming from Saudi Arabia, from Bahrain, from Oman, from Iraq, from Kuwait, from other Arab countries who come to work in Qatar. So if you see, Qatar is like a melting pot with 150, 60 nationalities we have in Qatar. So we are proud to see these different culture, different nationalities are working in Qatar.
Lisa, let me jump back in here if I may. And,
absolutely.
And Mr. Ambassador, first of all, let me publicly thank you for the great support that I received from your government and from your armed forces when I was still on active duty. I also thank you for taking your time and being so generous with your time, sharing it today with the Chamber of Commerce and the Alaska World Affairs Council. Just so you know, he is not here fishing and enjoying the pleasures of Alaska. He's working. He will have meetings with companies here. He's meeting later this afternoon with the governor. And I very much thank you for coming as far as you have and want you to come back whenever you can and maybe come back and have fun next time as opposed to working so hard. Thank you very much for being here today.
I guess there are more questions.
I've got three more questions.
More questions to finish.
We'll go through them quickly. Okay, so the first one is, do you believe that the abandonment of the Sykes-Picot Agreement and the redrawing of the borders would contribute to the peace process?
Well, I believe that borders should stay as they are, you know, because once you change, then you will have more problem. So anyone thinks of division of any country in the region, that means we'll have more tension, more problems. So we have to live with the borders as they are. And I think nowadays, you know, like Europe, the borders is not an issue. You see people are working together, countries are open borders, and, you know, we want to have our regions like this, not to think about the borders. Borders, it's It's been drawing a long time ago by Sykes-Picot. So we have to stay as it is and focus mainly in how we can enhance our economic cooperation and reduce the political tension.
Okay, and then do you think Russia is playing a productive role in the Middle East, especially in Syria?
They can play a positive role, but they have to be with the Syrian people, not with the regime.
Okay. And then, could you just say a few more words about FIFA World Cup in 2020, and should we come?
Yeah, I think the FIFA, the World Cup, like I explained, it is like cultural bridge. We have to encourage that. You know, we have to say, thank you, Qatar, you are hosting the World Cup in the Middle East. Because all the continent, all the region, they hosted the World Cup except our region. So it is the first time that we host this big event. I think we have to encourage, we have to say that, you know, a country like Qatar is bringing all this event to the region to give hope for the young people and to reduce the tension, because a lot of people thought that why they did not, this World Cup does not come to our region. What's wrong with us? But now we brought it as a country in the name of the whole Middle East countries. So when we presented our candidacy, we said we are presenting the whole Middle East, not only Qatar. So I think this event, if you go to the region and talk to young people, they will tell you it's great things, regardless of where they are from, which country. They don't really look at, because Qatar is hosting it, because of the Middle East is hosting it. It's an Arab country in the Middle East hosting World Cup. It is, everybody's proud of it, and we are bringing this hope for our region.
I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you
so very, very much. And
well,
thank you,
thank
everyone.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad and honored to be here. And I thank again the World Affairs Council and the Chamber of Commerce. And I just want to reveal something here for the World Affairs Council. Hopefully, we are discussing to open a branch in Qatar.
First international branch in the world.